talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning. This is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
Kate Marquis is joining us here in the coveted Michelle chair. If you listened to our podcast last week, it only lasted 35 minutes. Crazy. We usually try to go 54 minutes, but we had a technical problem. We ended up losing about 20 minutes of our podcast. Totally my fault. But we were supposed to review 9 movies last week. We did review 9 movies last week when Lynn Benhouse was here, but only 3 of them made it into the final podcast. So we're going to revisit some of those movies that you guys didn't get to hear our reviews of. And then we've got some new movies to review and lots of stuff to talk about. So, you guys ready to get started?
Yes, I am.
You ready to get started, Kate?
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about the top 12 in the box office. Number 12, Rules Don't Apply.
Oh my gosh!
Warren Beatty's movie only made $1.5 million.
Didn't even make the top 10. I wonder how many theaters that's in. It's probably at least, what, 600, 800, you think?
2,000.
2,000 screens?
Oh yeah, it's a lot of release.
It's got a lot of attention. There's a lot of things in.
Yeah, it got a lot of publicity. I guess it had bomb written all over it. This is going to do worse than Town and Country 15 years
ago. Oh, that's hard to imagine.
So poor Warren. Loving in 420 screens made more money than Rules Don't Apply over the weekend.
Well glad to hear that.
It's a vastly superior film. So
I did see Loving, actually. I saw it Saturday evening.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed that.
I enjoyed it. It was well acted and well done. I don't think I'll ever sit through it again, but it was a good film. So that made 1.69. Number 10 was Edge of 17, which we reviewed last week. I can't remember if that was one of the ones that made in our final.
I think we just barely mentioned it in the top 12 last week, I think.
All right, Hacksaw Ridge, which I saw 1.5 more times over the weekend. That is number 9 with 5.4 million. That was pretty crowded when I saw it on Friday. Number 8 was Almost Christmas, which Jim reviewed at WeirdMovieGeeks.com. That made 5.7. Bad Santa 2 debuted at number 7, which is too bad. It's a funny movie. I reviewed it at We Are Movie Geeks, and we'll be reviewing it here. Anybody see it besides me?
That's you, Tom.
Okay. But it didn't do very well. It only made $6.1 million its opening weekend. All right. Number 6 was Trolls. That's been around for a while. That made $10.3 million. Arrival's doing pretty well. It's it made $11.2 million for fifth place.
Oh, so I was gonna say it was at 4 the last 2 weeks, so that's not much of a drop at all, really.
It's made $62 million in its 3 weeks as play. Allied, it was the top grossing debut film that starred Brad Pitt and Maria Cotillard.
Well, no, I think the top grossing is the top grosser of the weekend.
I stand corrected.
Yes.
Anyways, Allied made $13 million. Mm-hmm. According to this, it made $13 million exactly.
Wow, that
seems a little hard as well.
Yeah,
that's strange. Number 3 was Doctor Strange, 13.3, in its third or fourth week, so that's doing very well. It's made over $200 million. And Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them was number 2. It made $45.1 million. And number 1 was Moana. That Disney animated film made $55.5 million.
We'll
review that here in a second. Did you see Moana, Kate?
No, I missed that.
Jim saw Moana.
And I reviewed it, yes.
I saw Moana, but I didn't see all of Moana. I only saw about a half hour of Moana. I had actually to walk out of Moana. Not because it was a bad movie, but because this family of obnoxious children sat behind me and were kicking my seat and yelling and screaming. And they ruined the movie for me.
There were no other seats available. That's too bad.
There weren't very many seats available. Yeah. Actually, this was Friday around noon. But by that point, the movie was ruined for me.
I
hate to be a big baby. And I don't walk out of movies that often. I know you and I saw Hardcore Henry together a few months ago, and about 30 Sam minutes into that, I left. But only because the handheld camera was making me sick. That's the last movie I actually walked out of. So it's not like I walk out of a lot of movies.
Well, I hope you can see Moana with fresh eyes sometime, because it's certainly worth your time, I think.
Well, I went over and I watched about an hour of Hacksaw Ridge again, and then I went back and saw about the last 10 minutes of Moana, and they were fighting some sort of lava demon monster or something like that. So, yeah, it looked pretty good. And my daughter and her little friend who sat there and watched it, they enjoyed it. All right. So let's go ahead and review Moana formally, since we've already sort of gotten into it. Jim, how many stars did you give Moana over
Weird Movie News? I think I gave it 4, maybe 4.5, something like that. Yeah, it's...
This peaceful island has been home to our family. But beyond our reef, a great danger is coming. Legend tells of a hero who will journey to find the demigod Maui.
I think it's a pretty strong film now. This is not a Pixar release. It gets a little confusing because both Pixar and Disney Animation are released through Disney Distributing, but they're really two separate entities. Pixar's big hit this year, of course, was Finding Dory. And let's see, Disney Animation, I guess their biggest hit was probably Frozen. And they follow that up with Wreck-It Ralph was one of theirs, which is a good one. Tango was another one of
theirs. Big Hero 6?
Big Hero 6, big hit for them, and they're really finding their own voice with this film. This is a flat out all out musical, similar to as Frozen was. And it's a very entertaining story. It's set in the South Pacific. It's a different locale for Disney. It's about mythology in the South Pacific, and involves a demigod played or called Maui, who is voiced wonderfully by Dwayne Johnson. And we hear about him in the opening sort of pre-title sequence, in which the grandmother of the tribe that's living on this island tells the story of how this the heart of the island that started everything on the earth has been stolen by Maui. He's lost it, and it turns out there's more to this legend than just a fairy tale, because the island is slowly dying. They're not able to catch any fish around there. The coconuts are rotting from the inside. And Moana is the sort of the princess, the daughter of the chief, and she's going to be next in line to sort of watch over the peoples. And she decides she's going to venture beyond the island and find Maui, who will help her find this rock. And it's got some great songs by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah, I think I only heard one song. Or maybe I heard one at the end.
Well, you probably missed the best song, which is sung by Dwayne Johnson, called Welcome.
I missed that.
And she does end up, Moana does end up catching up with Maui, and it is a scene-stealing performance by Dwayne Johnson. It's a wonderful character. I love the design of it. I think I mentioned in my review, he's like Shemp Howard with a bad perm, with his hair parted in the middle, just blowing out everywhere.
And his tattoos that move around.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. Of course, the whole film is a CGI animation, but they're able to put in some 2D animation with the tattoos that sort of come to life and become animated on his chest. And he has little interactions with him now. He says, you better stop there, I'm going to put you right under my armpit,
So are the songs any good?
I think Your Welcome is very good. There's a song that I think Lin-Manuel sings himself about how wonderful life is on the island, and that's very good. The movie is pure eye candy. It's just gorgeous.
But are there songs as good as Wash That Man Right Out of My Hair? That's the best South Pacific song.
Yeah, or Let It Go, although I don't know if the kids will be driving their parents crazy with singing You're Welcome over and over again. But, boy, it is pretty entertaining. It's got a lot of girl power stuff.
It's got a couple of
cute animals in it. There's a rooster. Well, it's kind of rooster that's really dopey. Rooster. Hey. And it's just beautiful. It's got these great purple orange sunsets, and the flora and the fauna on the island are just gorgeous. And it's a very entertaining film.
All right, so Jim really liked it. You gave it 4, is that right?
Yeah, I think so, 4 to 5. Right. Yeah.
So Jim gave it 4 stars. He thinks Moana's really terrific. I only saw a half hour of it, so I don't have an opinion. Let's move on. Bad Santa 2, I saw that. I reviewed that over at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. I gave it 3 stars.
You need a hug from Santa.
No, I don't need no fucking hug from Santa.
The first one, Kate? Bad Santa back in 2003? No?
I know I need to catch up with
it was...
Because I like Billy Bob Thornton.
This is a great character. I think that's the strength of this movie, is that Willie soaks is such a great character. You can plop him into anything, and that's kind of what they do here. In the first movie, he teamed up with a little black dwarf. What was that, Tony something? What's that little black
I know. He was on...
Anyways, he teams up with him, and then he dresses... And he was a department store Santa Claus, but he's a drunk. He hates kids. He's always either drunk or hungover, and he's got a foul mouth, and he's constantly chain-smoking. It's a pretty funny character. And in the first one, they teamed up... They were actually going to rob the department store where they were dressed up as Santa and his elf. In part two, you're introduced to Willie Soak again, and he's actually decided to end his life, so he's hanging himself with a toaster cord from his ceiling. But in walks this goofy redheaded kid that he had befriended in the first film, and that kid's name escapes me as well. But it's the same kid, and he's back, and I guess he was – that first film was 13 years ago, so now this young actor is probably, 25 or 26 years old, but he's still a total reject. He has no friends, so Willie Soak, the drunk Santa, is his best friend, and this kid gives him a note from the black midget character, whose name I can't remember either, and he had been in prison for that original robbery. Now he's out of prison, and he wants to team up with Willie to rob a charity in Chicago.
I think they prefer dwarf, Tom, or a little person.
What did I say? What did I say?
Midget? You said the M word. No.
Well, I think there's a difference between dwarf and midget, isn't there?
There is. But I heard that a lot of the small folk don't care for that phrase.
Okay. Anyways, so this midget sends him a note saying, I got this idea that we'll rob this charity in Chicago.
Send your emails to Tom Stockman.
In Chicago, and it's a charity that hires Santa Clauses to stand out on the street and collect money in these little buckets. So these buckets get full of cash, and they put them in the safe, and so they decide they're going to rob this safe of all this money. But it's really not so much about the plot as it's more of a character study of Willie Soak's. And the really great thing about this movie is they actually introduce him to his mother, Mrs. Soak's, and she is played by Kathy Bates. Now, you got to admire Kathy Bates for what she does in this film, because she really goes into the gutter to pull this character out. I mean, this is Willie Soak's mother in every way you can imagine. And I mean, she's got tattoos, and her bra is sticking out of her shirt, and she's got this kind of butch haircut, and she's just got this foul mouth and just talks about all the sex she's had in her life. And it's really a foul, disgusting character, but it's really, really funny. And the interaction between mother and son is just hysterical. And then you've also got
Christina Hendricks.
She's sort of the quasi love interest. I guess one complaint I have is Willie Soak's bad Santa keeps making these comments about how big Christina Hendricks' bosom is. But Christina dresses up in like bulky sweaters, and she dresses very modestly, so you really can't tell. So unless you're familiar with this actress. Kate's looking at me like I'm some sort of pig.
She was
kind of puzzling.
Why would they make references
and then cover
yeah,
up?
Yeah, you watched Mad Men, didn't you, Kate? Or did you?
I never watched Mad Men, but I do like Christine Hendricks. Yeah, she was in Drive, and she was just a Neon Demon.
Oh,
so I've seen her in other films where I've liked her, and I hope to see her in more films. No, she's really good. So anyways, this movie, you know, the whole caper stealing the money is sort of in the background. It's sort of unimportant. You sort of even forget it's there. This is really just about the goofy, filthy, vulgar dialogue between Bad Santa and his mom and the midget, and it's really a lot of fun. So I do recommend it. It's not as good as the first one. The first one was directed by Terry Zwigoff.
Yes, it was Zwigoff.
And we were talking a bit about him last week, how he directed three or four movies in a row that were just all three or four of them were fantastic, and then he sort of dropped out. He hasn't made a movie in 10 years. This one's directed by Mark Waters, who did
Mean Girls,
and it's not quite as edgy as the first one, but you know, as far as sequels go, you could do a lot worse than Bad Santa 2. So I do recommend Bad Santa 2. Let's move on, shall we?
Sure.
Let's talk about a couple of movies that we tried to review last week, but were unable to. Well, mm-hmm. I explained. Let's talk about Allied, because I saw Allied over the weekend. I saw it at the High Point.
And you saw Allied.
Yeah, I did.
You saw it?
Yes.
Who reviewed it for ourselves?
I believe I did, yes.
I thought Allied was actually quite good. I thought it was a perfect mix of war intrigue. It was very romantic, and yes. It had a lot of more war action than I was expecting, and it had a lot of nice twists and turns. I thought Allied is really one of the better films I've seen.
What are you doing?
Testing you the way you tested me.
Do they trust you?
I'm very good at pretending, Max. They're watching us.
Yeah, and I tell
you, a very classic sort of film, classic Hollywood type.
Yeah,
film.
Yeah. It, I mean, you know, Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard are kind of a classic glamour couple, mm-hmm. a Hollywood glamour couple. Even though she's from France, of course, but yeah, they've got some great chemistry together. And I think mm-hmm. I kind of compared it. Well, you know, when you're talking about a couple doing spy stuff, you have to reference Mr. and Mrs. Smith that Brad did many years
this
ago.
This is better than that.
I think it is better than that. Yes, yeah. Yes. But there is some sizzle between the two of them. How about that sandstorm, Tom and Kate?
Yeah.
Well, that was quite a sexy sandstorm, I must say.
Yeah.
They're teamed up together. I like I love how it opens, don't you, Tom? With him parachuting onto the sand dunes. That's kind of a nice shot, a quiet before the storm, I guess. Mm. And she's he's a Canadian pilot, undercover agent, and she is part of the French Resistance.
Or is she?
Well, you know, that's revealed. I saw one of the commercials finally. Yeah. I was on our last show. I was concerned about revealing too much of the plot, but it pretty much says in the commercial they think that she's a double agent.
Yeah.
But when they first meet, it's you know, pure sparks because she's already in Casablanca,
yes,
setting up things for them. They're posing as this longtime married couple, and
they don't know each other.
No, they never meet each other, and they have to, you know, their first time they meet each other, they have to do a full on, you know, lip lock.
Yeah,
and so that's always interesting. And he's kind of, they're both kind of pushing against the attraction. You know, he says that I know that that falling for your partner will kill you.
Yeah,
but
it's convincing.
Can't.
It's they fall in love convincingly.
I know.
It's just not a plot machine to throw them into this other set of, you know, intrigue. You really feel for these people.
Yeah, there's real heat between them, and I must say, well, they do their preparing for this mission, and I tell you, Tom, the mission itself is really exciting. It's
really
one of the best action sequences of the year. And
that reminds me of the climax of The Dirty Dozen.
Yeah, and there's a lot of films would end with that,
mm-hmm.
and this is just kind of the beginning, really.
Right.
And then they shoot to 3 months later, and he's stationed back in England, and he's petitioning to get her over to England, and they're looking over her records and all that. Everything seems to be okay, and she gets over there, and they start a family, and then all the stuff starts with the V Squad. They call them the sort of internal affairs department of the armed forces. They think that Marianne is not who she is claiming to be.
Mm-hmm.
They think that she is actually a Nazi spy, and they've tasked him with taking care of it, you know, that if, you know, they're sending out a dummy message, and if they find out that this dummy message has gone out, that means that she knows about it. And yeah, it's really exciting. Jared Harris is very good as Brad Pitt's commanding officer. And how about Lizzie Kaplan as Brad Pitt's out and proud sister? That was kind of an interesting twist.
Yeah,
that was
different. A lot of the film I thought suggested Casablanca with the spy intrigue and the feelings that they're trying to, you know, cover up and deal with and tamp down for the good of the war effort.
I think I gave it to you 3.5 or 4, six? Something like that. Yeah.
Okay. How many stars would you have given it, Kate?
I think I'd give it four.
I'd give it 4.5, 2. All right. So we all really recommend Allied. Manchester by the Sea opens this Friday, and Jim and Kate have both watched it. I have not.
So that's Lee Chandler.
I don't understand.
Which part are you having trouble with?
Well, I can't be his guardian.
Well, your brother provided for your nephew's upkeep. I think the idea was that you would relocate.
Relocate to where?
Well, if you look, it was my impression that you'd spent a lot of time here.
I swear.
So, Kate, is Manchester by the Sea any good?
Yes, it is.
Oh, I concur.
Yeah. No, it's already on my top 10 for the year. It was surprisingly good.
What if you see 10 better movies between now and the end of the year?
I think that's going to be – it's going to be hard to beat. Okay. It's really going to be hard to beat. Yeah. And while I was – it opened – they did a preview at the film festival at St. Louis International Film Festival. I went to that, and I interviewed the producer, Kimberly Stewart, who's from St. Louis, and she was in town to introduce the film. And the film stars Casey Affleck, who does like a career-making performance. He is just excellent.
He's got to be nominated for Best Actor.
It's an excellent film overall, but his performance is just really way out there, way wonderful. After the death of his older brother, Casey Affleck's character Lee finds that his brother has made him sole guardian of his teenage nephew. Nephew's like 15, 16 years old, Patrick. And wants him to leave his job as a janitor in Boston and move back to Manchester by the Sea, the little town in which he'd grown up. And
leave his job as a janitor?
Yes.
Yeah, he's kind of taking care of an apartment. But it starts with a – you think it's going to be a comedy because it starts out with this wonderful sequence of him having to fix all the stuff that's wrong with these people's apartments. And each tenant is wackier than the last.
And they have an endless stream of complaints. And
it's wonderful.
And at one place where he's working on the plumbing in the kitchen, one tenant is talking about how she thinks the handyman is so hot.
Yeah, she's on the phone with her girlfriend, she doesn't think he can hear her, but he hears every word.
So who does Michelle Williams play?
Well,
Michelle Williams plays Lee's ex-wife, and there's a very tragic reason that they are not together, and that's part of why Lee does not want to go back to his hometown.
Yes.
And although his brother Joe thought, you know, leaving a job as a janitor, what's the loss? Lee really does not want to move back to Manchester. Yeah. But he's very fond of his nephew, and he moves back there to try to make the transition. It's very true, very real, it's a low-key sort of drama, but it's completely believable. One of the best parts of it is it has so much humor in it. You don't expect something about somebody working through tragedy and loss to have humor, but the interplay between Lee and his nephew is just wonderful. They tease and carry on, and it's just like real guy stuff.
Yeah, it's played by a young actor named Lucas Hedges, who turns in a just really terrific performance. Yeah. So speaking of terrific performances, I think Michelle Williams is on the fast track for Best Supporting Actress for this film, particularly a scene in which she reconnects with Lee. Just they happen to run into each other
almost
on the street.
Confronts him.
Yeah,
because he's been avoiding her,
and it's a devastating scene. Yeah. It's completely raw.
What's this director?
It's terrific.
Kenneth Lonergan.
Oh, yeah, he did.
He wrote and directed it. And
it was only his third film. He did You Can Count on Me, and then what was the one?
Margaret.
Margaret, which was 3 hours long, and you couldn't even get a release, although I think Scorsese said it was the best film of the year.
But he's also a playwright, and
is that right?
Yeah, he's really has a lot of skills.
And he's got a great cameo in the film.
He does have a cameo in the film.
Better than Stan Lee's in Doctor Strange?
Not quite after that.
All right.
Pretty good.
So how many stars are you going to give Manchester by the
Sea? I'm going to give it 5.
5 stars? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot.
It's definitely a 5-star film.
All right. Yeah. How many stars would you have given it, Jim?
I agree.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, okay. Well, I'll have to see this Manchester by the Sea movie.
Well, you know, Casey's been great in a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah. He was nominated for the Jesse James.
Yeah, he's great in that. He was great in Gone Baby Gone. He's a really fine young actor.
Yeah, and To Die For. That's the first thing I think I saw him in.
Yeah, that's right.
He's been around for a long time. Yeah, he's a great actor.
Yeah.
And you know he's the brother of Ben Affleck?
Oh, my goodness. Maybe he'll get him a job.
Yeah. There go. All right. Let's move along. Let's re-review Rules Don't Apply, which is another one I haven't seen. That's Warren Beatty's movie, which bombed. It barely made the top 12, and it only made $1.5 million.
This game Howard Hughes plays with young women, it doesn't fool me one bit. Nobody's getting any younger.
If anybody working for me wants to strike up a relationship with one of our contract actresses, I have to fire him.
What are you doing?
You've got a driver's license, don't you?
Poor Warren. What is wrong with this movie? What is wrong with Warren?
Well, you know, you reviewed that for
me. I did review it.
You were a little kinder than I would have been.
I think I downgraded the rating on it because after I thought about it, it's like, Rules Don't Apply kind of starts out as a boy meets girl classic Hollywood romance tale, and it looks like it's going to be fun and lighthearted and all that. And then Howard Hughes appears. That's played by Warren Beatty. And once Howard appears as in the form of Warren Beatty, he takes over the film. He takes over the story.
Well,
and he does this kind of Howard Hughes biopic, which is far inferior to The Aviator.
Oh, yes.
And kind of, you know, torpedoes his own film, I felt, in a lot of ways. It's just, it's complicated. It says, you know, the commentary about Hollywood, we've all heard that before, about the casting couch and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, and Howard Hughes kind of has a harem. He kind of keeps all these young actresses and these bungalows all spread around the city.
Yeah, Marla Mabry, which is played by Lily Collins, is this small town beauty queen who's very religious and arrives there with her mother in tow. And Howard Hughes sets her up in her own little house, not an apartment. She has a driver. She has this luxury stuff.
Oh, mother is Annette Bening, by the way.
Yeah, Annette Bening plays the mother. And she's really, you know, going to make sure that the virginity stays intact.
Is she still married to Warren Beatty?
Oh,
yes,
you betcha.
Yes, she is.
Going strong.
But, you know, they are waiting and waiting and waiting for their screen tests and to meet Howard Hughes. But instead, she just kind of remains there. And she discovers there's a whole bevy of these starlets who are set up in little apartments, and they have their own drivers. Now, there's a rule, though, that no employee of Howard Hughes can have anything to do with these actresses. It's hands off. Yeah. Can't even sit in the front seat with them. Yeah. You know, can't have any interaction.
No dinner with them.
Right. No dinner. No fraternizing.
Yes.
And that becomes kind of an issue because the driver assigned to Lily Collins's character is Frank Forbes, played by Alden Ehrich.
Einreich?
I'm not sure how to say his name. Yeah. But he's a very handsome fellow.
Just
also
call him Han Solo.
Yeah, young Han Solo.
He's a very handsome fellow, but also very religious, and the two of them are immediately attracted, but they're in this bind, which makes that, you know, set up for a wonderful romantic comedy.
I should call him that cowboy character from Hail Caesar.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. He
was so wonderful in Hail Caesar.
He was terrific as the cowboy in Hail Caesar. But, you know, all that potential for a romantic comedy between these two characters is really torpedoed when Warren Beatty shows up as Howard Hughes and kind of takes over the film.
So how many stars did you give it when you reviewed it? WeAreMovieGeeks.com.
You know, I think I gave it 3.
Was it originally 3.5? Did you ground down right?
It's pretty generous to give it 3.
Okay.
And there are a few critics who like this film.
But the audiences really apparently don't, because it's bombed big time. It only made $1.5 million. I hate to think what it's going to make next weekend. But speaking of that, Wednesday night I went to see what's the one with Naomi Watts?
Shut-In?
Shut-In, yeah. I went to see Shut-In, and it wasn't showing anywhere.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, it opened last Friday and ended on Tuesday.
Well, I think one of the reviews we lost last week was for Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
No, that's not one of the reviews.
No, that's okay. But you downgraded that one, right?
Oh.
And that's not even in the top 12, is it?
No. In fact, showing it like one time over at the Galaxy. It was like 10:15 a.m. is the only time it was showing.
Well, I'm happy that I hate to say that, but I'm happy the audience is rejecting it because, you know, it's not worthy of their attention.
I almost saw that. What did I see instead?
And it's a shame because Ang Lee is such a fabulous director.
Oh, Ang Lee is so talented.
How on earth he made this film, I don't know.
All right, let's move along. Let's revisit Nocturnal Animals.
Make a big mistake. You'll never find out.
When you love someone, you have to be careful with it.
I reviewed that at WeirdMovieGeeks.com. I gave it 2.5. But I got to confess, this movie's kind of stayed with me. I've thought about this movie in the past 2 or 3 weeks since I've seen it, even though it is sort of lousy. Nocturnal Animals, of course, stars Amy Adams as this mopey, whiny, rich woman who lives in L.A., and she owns this art gallery, and we're introduced to her art gallery with a bunch of dancing, overweight, middle-aged, naked women. Which I don't know how audiences are reacting to that. It certainly didn't make much money, but it's only playing in St. Louis at the Frontenac, so I guess it didn't get a wide release.
That was kind of a performance art sort
of
thing.
It was part of it.
Yeah, and they go to the gallery opening, and these women are writhing on mattresses inside this gallery.
Yeah.
And as people walk around with their glass of wine.
It's very strange.
At least they weren't eating sushi off of them.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she's got this husband played by Armie Hammer, and he's not faithful to her, and he's a stockbroker who's in some financial difficulty himself, and he seems to be in, you know, denial about their marriage and their future. And she gets this manuscript in the mail, and it's a book called Nocturnal Animals, a novel written by an ex-husband of hers that she hasn't spoken to in 19 years. And he's played by Jake Gyllenhaal. And so she sits down to read this book, and then all of a sudden the audience is in the book. And the book is about a math teacher, also played by Jake Gyllenhaal, who's driving down a Texas highway with his teenage daughter and his wife, played by Isla Fisher, and three sort of snaggletooth vermin run them off the road and terrorize them, and this sort of long scene that I think goes on a little too, it's a tense scene, but I think it goes on a little bit too long. That doesn't end well. So he teams up with this cancer-stricken detective played by Michael Shannon, and who I just saw in Loving, by the way.
Yeah, he's got a very small part in that, yeah. Doesn't he? Yeah.
He's terrific.
And they team up to solve this crime, and then you keep going back and forth to the story of Amy Adams as Susan and how unhappy she is. And then you go back to flashbacks of her life when she first meets with Jake Gyllenhaal and their marriage, where she's much happier.
And her mother, who's played by Laura Linney, who's maybe about 4 or 5 years older than Amy Adams, and she's wearing this outrageous blonde bouffant from 1963.
I kind of like Laura Linney.
I don't know what she's doing in it.
I said in my review, the two stories don't really mesh. You've got this sort of dark, dirty, earthy tale taking place down in Texas, and then you've got this sort of pretentious art film that takes place in L.A., and I don't know if the two elements really work together as well as they should. I really didn't quite understand the point. It was all sort of pretentious, but it definitely has some good scenes.
Got a toilet on the front porch.
That's right.
Well, I thought part of the point was class division, because Laura Linney's character is chiding her daughter about her first husband, that he's not your class, he's not your type. You'll become like
Well,
me.
She's identified. And she does. She's identified as a conservative Republican, because you know they all just think that way.
I just wonder about where she got that
wig. Wealth more than the conservative Republican part.
All right, let's move on.
Yeah.
What haven't we reviewed? Oh, we haven't reviewed Eagles Huntress. The Eagle Huntress.
Did you see that, Kate?
Yes, I did.
Boy, is that great, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
How great is it?
It's a 5-star movie.
On a scale of 1 to 5, you give it a 5, really? It's a documentary, right?
Yeah, I would give it a 5. How about you, Kate?
Oh, yeah, I would think so, too. And it just has beautiful photography. It's an interesting story. And the way they present it, it's really...
And there's not an ounce of fat on it. It's just clocks in at about 85 minutes, and it's just perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, it tells the story. It doesn't, you know, hammer it over your head, and it's terrific.
Is it the best documentary of the year?
I don't know. I really like De Palma.
Wiener?
I really like Tickled.
Wiener was good, too. Yeah.
And if you haven't watched Tickled, I suggest that too.
I have not.
I didn't see Tickled.
Yeah, that's in your screener pack.
Back to Eagle Hunter. So this is about a girl who hunts eagles and kills them?
Well, it's about a girl that has to train an eagle to help her hunt foxes.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
The eagles are the hunters.
But this is a task traditionally, it's in a traditional Mongolian family, task traditionally done only by men. And there's a lot of resentment that her father wants to train her to do this because it's supposed to be only men.
Somebody narrates this film.
Daisy Ridley.
Oh, that's right, Daisy
Ridley. Yes, all the way from Star Wars Force Awakens.
She's British, correct?
She is. And this is set in Mongolia. They do some wonderful sequences. There's a bit where she acquires her eagle as out of the nest, and where she has to climb these rocks, and they do some great, I guess it's drone photography, showing how she's able to capture this eagle. It's very suspenseful and very beautiful at the same time.
The
relationship between this girl and her father is really, really wonderful. I can't recommend this film enough. It's gorgeous to look at. It's got a great message. They cut away to the elders of the village, I guess you'd call them, and they're going, the women should stay back and cook and all that. And then there's a big festival at the end of the film in which they sort of have to show how well they work with the Eagle. Mm-hmm. And her performance in that is just really, it's one of the best sequences in the whole film. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is like a little 13-year-old girl, too.
Yeah, so yeah. She's and she's really quite she's, young. She's charming in the film. Yeah.
So this is a family-friendly, it sounds like?
Oh, sure.
Definitely.
Yeah, so it might be disturbed by some of the hunting stuff in it. But, yeah, there's a whole sequence where they have to actually go hunt a fox, and it can be a little brutal, but
not good for the fox.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. So Jim and Kate really think that the Eagle Huntress is very, very good. Every Thanksgiving, my family and I go to a movie together. We always try to find some family-friendly movie to see. I think 2 years ago we saw the Walter Mitty thing with Ben Stiller. Mm-hmm. I think 3 years ago we saw, Saving Mrs. Banks?
Oh, Saving Mr. Banks.
And this year we were debating what family-friendly movie to see. We thought about seeing Fantastic Beasts, but the kids didn't want to see Moana because that was a kids' movie.
Yeah.
So we saw Hacksaw Ridge.
You didn't all see that.
Oh, you bet we did. Oh, we even took my 85-year-old Alzheimer's addled mother-in-law, and oh boy, we all loved Hacksaw Ridge. Actually, we did. Even my 13-year-old just loved Hacksaw Ridge. We were all weekend long. We were saying, "Dear Lord, please help me find one more." So, all right. Well, let's move along. I think we're done. I think we're done reviewing movies, though. Mm. I guess next week we can review Lion and Jackie.
And Miss Sloan.
And
Miss Sloan opens on the 9th.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
that was great.
And then this afternoon we're seeing Patterson.
Yeah.
Which is Jim Jarmusch's new movie starring Adam Driver.
And we'll talk about Man Down, which I'll be seeing tomorrow night.
That's right. Now, Adam Driver plays a school bus driver.
Yes.
I wonder if he got that role because his name's Driver. Did Minnie Driver ever play a driver?
I don't think so.
All right. So we'll be back next week to review those. Let's talk about some local stuff going on. A week from Thursday, they're showing Die Hard over at the Schlafly Bottle Works. That's always a fun movie to watch at Christmas time.
I was going to say, this is their Christmas extravaganza here.
Well, we're also doing Christmas Story on the 16th, which is a Friday night. We do that every year.
I
host these events. They're always a lot of fun. Christmas Story, we always get a big crowd.
Oh, yeah.
So that's Die Hard next Thursday, which is December 1st. We're No Angels, starring Humphrey Bogart.
Hmm.
And who else in that?
Peter Ustinov and what's
Aldo
his?
Aldo Ray, I believe.
Aldo Ray. Is this Joan Bennett in that also?
Yeah, I think so.
And Leo G. Carroll? I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen it. Have you seen it?
I've not seen it. I've seen the remake.
I saw the remake. Neil Jordan directed the remake. No. It had De Niro and Sean Penn.
Yeah, Demi
Actually,
Moore.
I didn't see the remake, but I saw the original. I like it. It's kind of cute and charming. It's not the sort of thing you expect from Humphrey Bogart.
Is he
kind of more a comedy?
Yeah, is he kind of playing a version of his character from African Queen a little bit?
Or any number of gangster type scenes.
Oh, okay.
Past.
It was based on a play. I don't know a whole lot about it. I don't remember the De Niro version that well. I do remember sort of liking it. It was a real bomb, though. But that's a nice outside the box Christmas choice for the high point. They always show three Christmas movies around this time of year, and the weekend after that, they're showing It's a Wonderful Life, and the weekend after that, which would be the 17th, they're showing
White Christmas.
Yes. And then on the 23rd, which is a Friday at midnight, the high point is showing Die Hard. So if you don't make it out to Schlafly next Thursday to see Die Hard, you can see it on the 23rd.
It's like that and the Gremlins and Lethal Weapon. All Christmas movies. All the first Tales from the Crypt movie has a Christmas sequence.
Yeah. Fathom events. Last night I went to a Fathom event and I saw Breakfast at Tiffany's, which is a movie I had never seen before.
Really?
So now I can go to my grave with having seen Breakfast at Tiffany's. I doubt I'll ever watch it again, but I get it. I understand why it's such a beloved film.
And you believe Mickey Rooney should have won a supporting actor Oscar?
What was going on with Mickey Rooney? What were they thinking?
I don't know. You watch the film and it's a sweet little love story between George and all of a sudden Mickey Rooney comes in with the big glasses
and the big
teeth.
Buck teeth. You know what he looked like? Remember the Dick Tracy cartoon?
Jojitsu.
That's what I kept thinking. I go, this guy is Jojitsu from the Dick Tracy cartoon. around.
Yeah, I remember the movie Dragon, the story of Bruce Lee, and he and his soon to be wife go on a date, and they go see Breakfast at Tiffany's. He's sitting there going, "What the hell?" Yeah.
But it was funny though. I mean, Mickey Rooney was funny. He was cracking me up. You know, who's really good in Breakfast at Tiffany's is Buddy Ebsen.
Yeah,
that's really the most moving scene in the whole film.
He's like Audrey Hepburn's husband.
Yeah, he married her when she was 13. She was almost 14. She says,
"Son, I need a friend." I think he says to George Peppard. But as far as Blake Edwards' movies go, it's one of his best. And boy, that guy had a heck of a career. He directed a lot of classic films. And,
yeah,
and that one, everyone thinks of him as the wild Pink Panther comedies, but he could do these nice little romantic films like that.
No doubt. But anyways, the next Fathom Events film. Actually, there's a Fathom Events film this weekend. It's Spirited Away, which is a beloved Miyazaki Japanese animated film, which I've never seen. But it won the Oscar for Best Animated Film about 15 years ago. In fact, I think it's 15th anniversary. And then on the 18th and 21st is going to be From Here to Eternity. So I go to these things because they give me free tickets, but there's rarely very many people at them. I think they charge more than they charge for a regular movie. I don't know why they can't make it $7 or $8.
Yeah.
I don't know why they're trying to make so much. If they charged $5 or $6 or $7, they'd probably get a big crowd. People don't want to pay $13 or $14 to see a movie that they can watch at home. But I'm always glad to go see these movies. What else is going on? Let's see. Oh yes, the Magic Smoking Monkey Theater Group. These guys are a local theater group. They're an offshoot of St. Louis Shakespeare, and every year they take a movie or a TV show or something, and they spoof it into a stage play. Last year, they did Mad Max. They did the Mad Max, four of the Mad Max movies, and they actually had a different actor come out to play him for the final one. And then we saw, Twilight Zone. I thought that was one of their weaker ones. Super Friends. During Vincent Tenniel, they did the Abominable Dr. Fives, and they've done. I've seen them do the Harry Potter. Anyways, starting this December 2nd, 3rd, 9th, and 10th at 8 and 10:30, and this is over at the Regional Arts Commission building down in the Loop. They are doing the making of the Star Wars Christmas special, and I don't know. Who's playing? Wasn't Harvey Korman in that?
And B. Arthur and Art Arthur. Carney.
I've never seen it. Have you seen it?
And Diane Carey. Yes, I saw it when it was first broadcast. Really? And I think I've got an old VHS dupe bootleg of it.
I think it's on DVD now. It used to be a thing that you'd go to comic shows and buy bootlegs of because it was just floating around in the black market. But they finally actually released it and people are embracing it.
Lucas insists that it's not part of the Star Wars canon, and it's all about the Wookiee planet going back for Life Day.
Well, who the heck does Harvey Korman play?
I want to say he has a romantic Hedley Lamarr? Scene with B. Arthur. B is the proprietress of the cantina. That you saw in the first film, Hive of Scum and Villainy.
The Magic Smoking Monkey Theater will be spoofing that. I think that's almost beyond spoofing.
How can you spoof that?
Yeah, but it'll be funny. These guys are good writers and actors, and they're doing some commercials, and I've been told that they are going to be spoofing the Charles Bronson Mandem commercial. So that's very exciting. All right, so go check that out. You can go to the Magic Smoking Monkey. You go to Magic Smoking Monkey, Google it, and it'll take you to the stlouisshakespeare.com site where you can buy tickets. All right, we've lost a couple of actors and actresses. You say Ron Glass? I know him from Barney Miller.
Yes, yes, and, Lieutenant Harris from Barney Miller.
African-American dude.
Yes.
But you say he was in some films as well?
He was in a couple of films. He was in, his last one was the Death at a Funeral, which was sort of a remake of the British comedy.
I reviewed that.
Yeah, yeah. And the other TV role he's most known for is his role on Joss Whedon's Firefly, and that was turned into a feature film, Serenity, and he reprised his role in that. So he was a talented actor, a lot of TV over the years, but a few films.
Okay, well, RIP, Mr. Ron Glass. And speaking of Glass, Jan Brady's imaginary boyfriend in that famous Brady Bunch episode was George Glass. And Carol Brady, Florence Henderson, passed away last week at the age of 82. Yeah, good for her. Yeah. She made it to 82. She, again, like Ron Glass, she's mostly known for television. Although she did a couple film roles. There was The Song of Norway, which was made in 1970, and that must have been made right before the Brady Bunch. So maybe they were marketing her as a new Julie Andrews or something. I don't know. I've never seen Song of Norway, have you?
It's, I guess, the true story of Edvard Grieg, the composer. And this is one of those notorious bombs that came out of Hollywood in the wake of Sound of Music.
Like Lost Horizon.
Yeah, all the studios said, oh, we got to have a big budget, you know, musical that'll get people away from the TV screens and into the theater. And it didn't happen with Dr. Doolittle. That was another one. Or Our Star, or Hello, Dolly, or this film.
But then she made The Brady Bunch, and that was a big hit, and everybody knows her from that. She did another film. We were just talking about Bad Santa. There's a film very similar called Shakes the Clown.
Yes.
I mean, Shakes the Clown is Bad Santa. He's this guy who's supposed to dress up and entertain kids, but he hates kids, and he's always drunk and puking and hungover. That was Bobcat Goldthwait. But that movie was made, I think, around 91, maybe.
Yeah.
But it opens with him in bed with Florence Henderson, and she's this nasty slut that he has picked up and taken home, and she's got her lipstick all over her face, and he wakes up, sees her in bed, and starts vomiting.
She's like a clown groupie, I guess.
Yeah, right? And you know, you got to hand it to her; she was sort of spoofing her wholesome image by appearing in that role.
Yeah, and she's got a film coming out next year, actually, that was shot here in this area.
Yeah, it was shot over in Columbia, Illinois, and I know the director writer. His name is Srikant Chelappa, and he filmed this movie. It's called The Grandmother's Murder Club, and she co-stars with Pam Grier, my favorite actress of all time, and Judge Reinhold, I think, is the male lead. And I don't know a whole lot about it. I guess it's a comedy about, I don't know, grandmothers who murder people or something.
Murder mystery, yeah.
But I think it's currently in post-production, and maybe it'll play at SLIFT next year. I guess her death and all the publicity isn't going to hurt it.
But I hope it's a good performance. I hope it's a good film, too.
I hope it's a good film as well.
Yes.
We'll see. All right. Anything else we need to talk about? We got a couple more minutes.
Oh, let's see. You said you saw Loving This Weekend.
I did see a pretty strong film. Yeah, it was pretty good.
How about Nick Kroll in that? That was a surprise.
Yeah, I don't know who Nick Kroll is.
Ah, he's a comic actor, and he's got very good in some.
I know who was in the movie, but I wasn't familiar with him. I like the way that you talk. Let's talk about the upcoming Oscar race, because to me, it's not really coming into focus at all. I see these actors in Loving, Joel Edgerton, and Ruth Negga. They were both good, but they really downplayed these characters, which was good. I think you got to kind of credit the director. They could have said, "Oh, here's this juicy true life character. I'm going to really sink my teeth into this role," but they were all sort of subtle performances. These characters, I think, were probably sort of simple, uneducated people, and they didn't. There's not a whole lot of dramatic scenes for these actors, which I think is what the Academy looks for.
Well, I think that both of them could get nominations.
They could, and they were both very, very good. But I'm just, like I said, I don't think there was any big moments for either one of them in this film. We saw Fences. You see Fences? Yeah. Fences, I think, is probably more likely to get some acting noms, especially for Viola Davis in supporting role. I guess we'll review that again in a week or so. Yeah.
Well, we talked about Ruth Negga, and she's a definite possibility for Best Actress, I think it's after this weekend. I watched Jackie, which we'll talk about as it gets closer, and I think it's probably a two-person competition between Natalie Portman as Jackie and Emma Stone in La La Land. Did you get to see that, Kate?
I did.
I think they're both really strong.
I'm going to say, though, that I'm going to blank. The woman who was in the movie Christine.
Rebecca Hall.
Not a great movie, but such a fabulous performance.
I tell you.
I hope she's going to get a nomination.
If The Orchard, I think, is the company that put it together. If they can get the screener DVDs to all the Academy members, the critics and all that, then I think that's a real possibility for her picking up some critical awards.
It's really an astounding performance.
Of course, 6 months ago, Birth of a Nation was going to sweep the Oscars. But it opened and closed with a whimper and a rape scandal. I still think it's a great film, though. I think it's actually better than some of the films we've just talked about, including Loving and Fences. I think this...
Well, it's certainly better than Fences.
What's the name? Nate?
Nate Parker.
I think he deserves a Best Director nom.
Yeah. I agree, and I think that's a better film. It was kind of buried by that scandal from.
Yeah, and nobody saw it. It may have cracked the top 10 1 week.
Yeah, I think I think the whole subject matter might have hurt it. I think it being so well, still it's 2 or 3 years from 12 Years a Slave, and people think they probably know that story already, and maybe that's why they didn't go see it.
So what's going to be Best Picture? I mean,
I say it's La La Land.
You think so?
I say it's Manchester by the Sea.
Really? Okay. Well,
both fine films. Yeah. I would be happy with either.
There are some flaws. I have with La La Land, but the Hollywood musical thing, bringing that back is wonderful.
Oh, it's gutsy.
There's a little problem with how they get to the final scene that I think a number of people objected to, so it's not a flawless story.
People were walking out of that screening. I think it's an excellent film. Yeah. But.
Well, one of our reviewers, our brother reviewers, brother sister reviewers at Manchester by the Sea came out and said, the accents are all over the place. And I was like, that's just really nitpicky.
Really?
Yeah.
Casey Affleck can't do a New England accent.
Well, I'll overlook that if the story is gripping enough and the dialogue is certainly gripping enough and everything.
Well, we'll see how this all plays out. We'll probably change our predictions over the next few weeks. But for now, we're going to have to sign off, doggone it. We'll be back next week and we can review Jackie and Lyon and
Miss Sloan,
Patterson and Miss Sloan, et cetera.
Oh yeah.
But for now, I'm Tom Stockman,
Jim Betts,
Kate Markey,
and be sure to listen again next week.
Black leather, rock. Black leather, hello, darling.
Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather, rock. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Black leather, smash, smash, smash. Black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.
Forward into battle, there, chaps.
Crash, crash, crash. Black leather, smash, smash, smash.